They cheated on you. You promised yourself you wouldn't text them again. You wouldn't answer their calls. You'll stay strong this time. But then you break that boundary. And when that happens, you feel weak, kind of confused. Why do I have no control? Why does this person have so much control over me? Why can't I just do this? Why can't I just stay away from this person who I know isn't good for me? What's happening is what most people describe as a trauma bond, but most people don't define it. It is a cycle of pain, relief, then confusion, and then longing that keeps us emotionally attached to the person who hurt us. Your brain doesn't really differentiate betrayal from love the way that you might think that it would. All it knows is that this person was once your safety and your stability and your source of comfort, and losing them feels like a threat to your survival. So when you break no contact, it's not necessarily just a willpower issue. It's your body reacting to old attachment patterns. That buzzing phone, the message notification, it triggers this mix of hope and fear, and suddenly you're just right back in it. It's just part of human biology. Your attachment system doesn't understand betrayal. It understands proximity and distance. Your body thinks in terms of, this person who used to regulate me and make me feel safe is now gone, and it just wants that regulation back. Even, and this is the crazy part, even when that person is the one who dysregulated you, even when that person is the one who made you feel not safe. And here's something to make it more complicated. If you're someone who struggled with boundaries before the betrayal, this is going to be doubly hard for you. Most people that get cheated on typically have weaker boundaries. And so now having to enforce these boundaries after the fact is just doubly difficult. Maybe you grew up in an environment where your boundaries just weren't respected, so it wasn't worth trying to maintain them anyway. Maybe you learned that keeping the peace was more important than protecting yourself. And maybe you were taught that saying no was just selfish or mean. So now after this betrayal, you're not just learning how to maintain no contact with this one person that you love and you feel safe around. You're learning how to set boundaries for maybe the first time in your life. And you're trying to do it in the most painful context you could imagine. That's incredibly difficult. And to make this even more complicated, most people don't actually understand what boundaries even are. They tend to think of boundaries in one of two ways. Either they think of boundaries as extremely black and white, rigid, all or nothing rules like, I will never speak to this person again in any possible circumstance. Or they think of boundaries as like wishes or ideas that are completely gray, totally flexible. You just kind of go with how you feel in the moment with no real structure. But healthy boundaries have elements of both softness and firmness. They're firm in that they have clear lines that don't move. These are the non-negotiables, the things that you will not allow regardless of how you feel in the moment. But they're also soft in that there's some nuance and flexibility where appropriate. They can adapt to different contexts and different needs. So for example, if you have children with the person who betrayed you, a completely black and white boundary of I'll never speak to them again isn't realistic. It's not healthy for the kids in the majority of cases. But a completely gray boundary of I'll just see how I feel and manage it in the moment leaves you vulnerable to getting pulled back into old patterns. So the boundary in that example becomes role-based. You allow them to interact with you in their role as a co-parent, but not in their role as your romantic partner or spouse. You communicate about pickups and drop-offs, about school events, medical appointments, but you don't engage in late-night phone calls about your relationship. You don't reminisce about the good times. You don't let them treat you like a partner when they're only supposed to be a parent. And so this is where the nuance comes in. Like, you're maintaining contact, but you're managing which version of the relationship continues and which version ends. And then let's talk another example. If you're trying to rebuild the relationship, if you're considering reconciliation, the boundary work is complicated there too. Because now you have two roles that are existing simultaneously. There's the role of spouse who cheated on me or partner who betrayed me. And that's the reality of what happened. That can't be ignored or minimized. But there's also the potential role of partner I'm exploring a relationship with. The perspective of this is a new relationship I'm entering into. And you need boundaries that acknowledge both of these roles at once. For instance, a boundary might be not being intimate together right away. And it's not about punishment. It's about recognizing that you can't be intimate with someone in the role of new partner I'm building a relationship with when you're still processing them as the person who devastated me. Those two roles might not, for you, be able to occupy the same space at the same time without clear boundaries separating them. You might need boundaries around communication. Maybe you'll talk about the affair and your feelings, but only in certain contexts, not during everyday moments. Maybe you'll spend time together, but not in certain places that trigger memories of the betrayal. Maybe you'll share your day, but they don't get access to your inner emotional world until they've earned that right back. These boundaries create space. Space between who they were and who they might become. Space between what happened and what might be possible for the relationship. Space for you to heal while still leaving room for connection. And maintaining these boundaries, keeping these categories clear in your mind, is going to be difficult, especially in the beginning when you need them the most. Because in the thick of it, in your actual lived experience, a single text might have the power to wreck how you were feeling for that entire day. So we need to be realistic with how we're setting these boundaries. And for many people, it's not just about the urge to reach back out or to have them reach back out to you. You're fighting the fear that breaking no contact, to use that as an example, might mean losing the last thread of the relationship you thought you had. And so start with micro boundaries if you have to. Instead of promising I'll never text them again, commit to a smaller window. No contact for the next 2 days. That's it. Just 48 hours. You can do 48 hours. And then when those 48 hours are up, commit to another 48 hours. Little wins can build momentum. But each time you keep a micro boundary and a micro commitment, you're training your brain that you can do it. And definitely try using the delay technique when you have an urge to reach out. Set a timer for 10 minutes before you do anything. You're not promising yourself one way or another, but you're giving your nervous system space to actually process what's happening. By waiting even just 10 minutes, your body is recognizing that it's not an immediate threat. The panic element subsides, and then you can choose what to do from there. Most of the time when the timer goes off, the intensity, the craving, the addictive feeling is gone. And replace the ritual. You know, if constant texting was your thing, try to come up with a replacement behavior that involves writing. Get a phone journal app or a physical journal and just write about the things, or find a new person to text. And then on the topic of no contact, there are a lot of triggers that you can take care of yourself. You can mute their notifications, you can block them, you can hide their chat, you can move their number into a locked notes app instead of keeping it in your contacts list. Just make it harder for yourself to break the boundary impulsively. And then just build a safety in your life. Other people that feel safe, other activities that make you feel calm. Maybe it's a physical activity that grounds you. You need to find other ways for your mind and your body to seek regulation other than the person who hurt you. Then you can also get curious. You know, when you feel this impulsive need to break no contact, what triggered it? Was it loneliness? Was it fear? Was it nostalgia? A specific memory, specific time of day? Awareness can reduce the likelihood that would happen again, and can set you up to have practical strategies for avoiding in the future. And something very important to cover, boundaries aren't mean. This isn't you punishing them. It's protection. It's self-respect. And your immediate thought might be, well, there are things they need from me, or are there things that I need from them? And it is true that people need other people, but you can't always get everything that you need from one person, and you can't always be the sole person that provides for someone else. It involves some element of faith, whether in humanity, in God, in the universe, that they will be okay and you will be okay, and that your being okay does not depend on constant interaction. This really ended up being a lot more about the no contact side of things. In the future, I'll make one more specifically about how to navigate boundaries when you're either trying to rebuild something or you have to stay in contact with them.